The College Game Day podcast is presented by Old Dominion Freight Line, helping the world keep promises.
We got a real simple plan. One man, one mission.
Georgia has won the national championship. Touchdown!
If you're a fan, you might think this is sports heaven.
This might be college football heaven. Yeah.
This is ESPN's College Game Day podcast. Now alongside Pete Thamel, is Reese Davis.
Where is the Fun Belt upset on Saturday? Is desperation the one that will carry the day in the picks? And can Texas follow up? This is the College Game Day podcast, the picks edition for Friday, September 16th. Reese Davis, Pete Thamel, and Bill Connolly. Pete, I'm upset with myself on the Superdog pick last week. Not, you know, it's nice to get Vanderbilt into the show. And for those who I think you're aware, Superdog pick, you pick an underdog, has to be more than a field goal. And the idea is you want to pick somebody you think that can win the game, right? So I got overly influenced by week one, a cardinal sin. I said that I wasn't going to do it again. I haven't been big on Wisconsin all year. But the way Washington State had to survive against Idaho week one scared me off of it. Instead, I went to Vanderbilt and got blown up, and I would have had an outright win as a two-touchdown dog or whatever it is. So the moral of this story is that whatever picks I make today, right, wrong, or indifferent, will be done fearlessly and with no regard for overly analytical thinking.
Trust your gut. No, your gut is usually right, and your gut should never trust Vanderbilt.
I thought Mike Wright had been responsible for 10 touchdowns. Good. Wake's been known to give up a bunch of points. You know, I was worried about the Sam Hartman return, you know, maybe energizing what's normally a sleepy environment. And it turns out that it did, and that was a really, really bad Superdog pick.
But yeah, I think the main takeaway so far is that Hawaii is really bad this year.
Yeah.
Like this was kind of a scorched earth kind of situation for them. And yeah, Vanderbilt has not quite lived up to that standard since.
Bill Connolly, you know, let's look at the records. Last week, Pete, me, Taylor, all 4-4. Bill, 3-5. Sarah came back to earth at 2-6. But over the course of the season, Pete, you and I are at the bottom. I'm at rock bottom. I'm a game behind you at 8-14. But I think I did get my lock again last week, didn't I? I got a Mississippi State over Arizona. So
it was a good pick. They dominated them. Yeah.
Yeah. So
I promised from the start that this is a my numbers are doing just fine this season, but I promised from the start that I would overthink and on one hand, but on the other hand, myself to death. And sure enough, like a good solid 10-12 so far.
One of the things that Bill does that I think is most fascinating in the postmortems of the week is you come up with the win expectancy. I really love that stat because fans sometimes get mad when people say, how did, you know, if especially if you're going against their team, and you say, well, this team should have won instead. But what you do, and I'm putting this overly in an overly simplistic fashion, is you take all of the stats, play by play, moment by moment of what happens in a game, put them into your formula and say, given these stats and these occurrences in the game, this is the likelihood that this team would have won. What was the most surprising result last week based on win expectancy?
There weren't many. There were only a couple that actually were kind of under 50%, like the team that should have won didn't. I was kind of expecting Wisconsin, Washington State to end up on that end, honestly, because I just, you know, watching that game, Wisconsin sure seemed to be creating more and figuring out ways to blow it, but it didn't quite work out that way. I think that, let me see. There were two games that were more surprising than the others. And here's the best podcast when I'm scrolling through a spreadsheet. Coastal, this one's kind of alarming. As well as so many Sun Belt teams did, Coastal Carolina probably shouldn't have beaten Gardner-Webb. That was just 18% chance based on those stats. Like they really, really struggled in that game. And then the one that kind of got people riled up a little bit was I only had App State at 23% against A&M. Kind of had to dive into that one a little bit. And basically the way that played out, it was such a perfect we're going to lose every first and second down, but get just enough on third down to keep the ball kind of situation for App State on offense. They'd be at like, 4 yards per play or something like that. It was a very low probability of success in the, in kind of the formula they used to pull the upset. It was great to watch. And it was, you know, it certainly reinforced some ideas we had about A&M and its quarterback play and everything, but really it was, my numbers dropped A&M, but not as much as I maybe expected, in part because, you know, they play that game again. They snap the ball more than 40 times. They don't give up a whatever 50% success rate on third downs and all that stuff. And they probably get away with it. So that was the biggest one, I think.
All right, let's start picking games here, boys. Let's go Reese, Pete, Bill to start, and we will start with Miami at Texas A&M, a 5.5-point favorite. Huge game for these two teams.
This is going to test my new resolve to not be overly analytical here, because this is one, you know, A&M's going to be desperate. That crowd's going to be electric. I'm not on the bandwagon of Miami being back. I am on the bandwagon in modern day college football. If you've got a dude at quarterback, even on the road, you take him. So I'm going to go with Tyler Van Dyke, and I'll take the points. I'll take the Canes.
I feel good because I want to disagree with Reese. I think that's I don't need my own SP plus formula to know that would have me on a pretty successful season. I think there'll be changes at Texas A&M. I think there'll be an energy bolt at Texas A&M. I love that it's an 8 o'clock local start. I think that there is a certain power to desperation in college football that, you know, is hard to quantify. From a housekeeping note, Jacoby George, who's one of Miami's best wide receivers, comes back this week. He had been suspended the first 2 weeks. And look, Van Dyke's excellent. He may be a top 10 pick in this upcoming draft before it's all said and done. It worried me a little that Miami sputtered around some with Southern Miss in the first half the other day. And I just think that until I get the empirical evidence from the Canes, I'm going to just stay safe with A&M, maybe with a quarterback change, and to see if they can you know, actually, if they possess the ball, I think they'll be in much better straits. So I just have a hard time seeing Miami as a program right now going in and winning that game in College Station. So I will take the Aggies and the points.
Yeah, I will completely ignore.
No, wait, you don't get, you're giving points. You're giving points, Pete.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a no-brainer then. Sorry, I misread the sheet.
No, yeah, you've got to win by six. I'm saying Van Dyke keeps them within six.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and be overly analytical and screw everything up, because you could really just look at this game and say, well, who has the better quarterback? Okay, well, then that's, you know, and they get 6 points or 5.5 or whatever. So that seems like a pretty good situation for Miami. I do think there's going to be an energy boost in College Station. And I was very spooked by that early kind of drought for Miami where, for an efficiency offense, they don't make a ton of big plays. For them to kind of stall out for a little while and really struggle to make big plays on Southern Miss, even, they're really going to struggle to make big plays against Texas A&M. So I figure home crowd, any change from Jimbo will be a surprise to me, because that's not really something he does. But I figure the just defense and line play and big play prevention get the job done, and A&M wins by, you know, 7-10, something like that.
Next up, BYU trying to add to its college football playoff resume. They are a 3.5-point favorite as they head to Eugene to face Oregon. Let's go Pete, Bill, Reese.
Well, as our listeners know, this is really a BYU football podcast masquerading around national college football. Investors in this game should probably watch closely to see if there's any injury updates closer to kickoff. Puka Nacua has an ankle, and Gunnar Romney has yet to play this year. Those are the two best receivers for BYU. So those are just things to watch if you are going to invest in the game. I think that's something certainly to watch. I feel like that BYU is going to go win this game. I just don't feel like they're going to be physically overwhelmed at all by Oregon, and I just have a hard time, you know, putting my faith in Bo Nix when it comes down to it. Some of this comes down to the feel we talked about when we did our week zero pick pod, which is just like, I would rather just not take UConn than like be like miserable saying, why did I take UConn? Even though there's some logic to that. And I think Bo Nix has sort of earned that scrutiny to just sort of say, you know what, maybe we'll just ride the team that's going to be consistent, the team that's going to be dominant at the point of attack, and the team that has the much, much, much better quarterback.
I'm struggling with this one because, you know, what we saw from BYU last week, beating a really good Baylor team without your top two receivers, matching physicality with a really physical team. You know, neither team could run the ball that well. Both teams had to, it was just a couple big plays here and there that ended up making a difference. that was a humongous test pass for BYU, and now they have kind of a different test. I think Oregon's probably faster than them, but they're probably the more physical team, or they've been the more successfully physical team so far. So that's going to be really interesting. I don't know. Oregon makes no big plays whatsoever, but they were super, super efficient. Like, their stats make them look like a service academy team right now. They never go three and out. They're very high in my success rate measures, and they and like almost dead last in explosiveness. So that makes this is a really kind of a weird experience right now. But I guess I'm just going to lean on home field. I do think that BYU clearly has a better quarterback situation, but Bo Nix has been just effective at the not scrambling too much, not trying to go too crazy, and just getting the ball out of his hands. If he keeps that up, I think they're in pretty good shape. I'll take Oregon.
You know, I will say that I think that Bo needs to be Bo. when he's at his, and I hate that phrase because who else is he going to be? Is he going to be Tom or Joe or Fred? But by that, I mean, if he can ever figure out when to take off and go on those whirling dervish, daring plays and not try to do it when he doesn't need to, his athleticism is much, much higher in terms of being able to run and be really effective moving the chains on third down, scrambling out of trouble. I mean, that ought to be a weapon for him. There's a gut feeling in me, and I know I said I was going to go with gut feelings that Oregon's going to show up, but I'm going to go with BYU on the same philosophy that I have with Miami. They're stronger in the quarterback situation. They're more stable. Miami's not more stable, but BYU's more stable than Oregon because it's a new regime. I think Dan Lanning will get there, but at this moment, Kalani Sitake's program is embedded in the minds and the hearts and the souls of those players. I think BYU goes in and wins a game, a tight game that Oregon plays really well, but BYU will win and win by just enough. I'd say probably a 4-point BYU win. It's a Football Friday, and if you're looking for more football content to get you primed for the weekend, look no further. ESPN Podcasts and Omaha Productions have been hard at work on a ton of NFL content. Your options for listening include The Dominique Foxworth Show, The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, Kyle Brandt's Basement, Fantasy Focus Football, The Adam Schefter Podcast, and The Bill Barnwell Show. Look, I know that's a lot, but there's nothing wrong with having options. You can follow all of those shows wherever you're listening to this podcast.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Next up, we've got a real interesting conference tilt between two teams that have already been tested a bit. Mississippi State, a 2.5-point favorite going to LSU. Let's go, Bill, Reese, Pete.
From the start, when he got hired by Mississippi State, I was really excited about Mike Leach bringing in, you know, a Rocky Long guy for his defense and trying to get as weird on defense as offense, just in terms of how hard it is to prepare for. I think their defense is better than their offense right now, or really close to it. Jaden Delora at the beginning of last week's game was making a couple of like crazy magical Jaden Delora plays, and then that just kind of stopped and Mississippi State took over. And so I think, you know, I really, really like what I've seen. And if we're talking about, this is an amazing thing to say, if we're talking about stability, it feels like Mike Leach's team has it over Brian Kelly's team at the moment. A year from now, we're not going to be able to say that anymore. But, I had to take advantage of it while I could. I think I trust Mississippi State a little bit more. What did we say? What was the line in this game? 2.5?
2.5.
Boy, that's a really good line. That makes it kind of. Never mind. I'm not going to overthink this. My numbers say Mississippi State by one. So that'll allow me to say Mississippi State's the better team and still pick LSU.
Mississippi State's going to win the game. I think they're the better team right now. LSU looked so disjointed and fragmented against in that opener against Florida State, that you wonder if everybody is bought in. And sometimes new coaches come in and they get immediate buy-in. And sometimes it takes a couple years because they have to get some guys out, they have to get new guys in. I think that my gut instinct and read on LSU is that's where Brian Kelly is. Brian Kelly is an excellent coach. He will win at LSU, but not Saturday night. I'll take Mississippi State.
I will follow Bill's lead, but not his logic. I really like Mississippi State's 3-3-5 defense under Zach Arnett. And I think if you look at Jaden Daniels and you look at the arc of his career and really his lack of development after that stellar freshman year, one of the things he's really struggled with, if you talk to coordinators who faced him, is reading defenses. Yeah. And I think that is about the hardest defense you can possibly read, because the 3-3-5s, you know, might not be the most sound. But I don't know if Jaden Daniels has got the guy that can take advantage of moments of unsound defense. So I'm looking forward to Emmanuel Forbes, who's one of the better corners in the SEC, locking up Kayshon Boutte, and we will see what his engagement level is if there are moments of struggle again, because obviously that came into be a factor against Florida State. But Will Rogers was just a rock star in that game in Tucson. You could say, oh, it's only Arizona, but hey, you go on the road at night and you pick apart a program, like, you know, kudos to you. Look, that guy's throwing for a lot of yards. He's going to throw for a lot more yards. And, you know, one thing about Leach teams is they tend not to flinch. They only run like 12 plays, right? So like, they're going to know what they're doing. There's going to be a comfort level. They're going to be able to endure adversity and a little bit of crowd noise. So I really like Mississippi State in this game. I don't think they're gonna blow them out, but I think they're gonna go in there and perform and win.
I will say, like, I liked LSU's response last week. It was Southern, obviously. You know, they're always going to beat Southern, but they were sharp from the start and they put the game away very, very quickly. That's all you can really ask for in those games. That was a good sign, but yeah, plenty of bigger challenges to come.
I love all the opining on the podcast here. we've got six more games we're going to pick. We're going to put these games into little boxes, the boxes that Reese established on Wednesday's show. So this grouping is games that sound better than they'll really be. Oklahoma, an 11.5 point favorite going to Nebraska. That's a big line, but I feel like Nebraska's kind of getting a lot of love. I don't know if it's that, you know, post-firing bump or whatever, but let's see what you guys think. Let's go Reese, Pete, Bill.
There is an energy jolt that you get from the interim coach. I think Nebraska's certainly embarrassed by the way things have started. And now a little bit of a new situation for Brent Venables taking a team on the road for the first time. The stadium will be alive because of the old Husker Nation loving this rivalry. I think we all thought that Nebraska had the potential to play better than it has in the opening couple of weeks. I don't know that you magically fix everything and giving up 7 billion yards to Georgia Southern and having Dylan Gabriel, who I love, walking through the door is not a recipe for optimism. And even so, I'm not going to sleep on the old Huskers this week. I think Oklahoma wins the game, but I'm taking the points. Give me the old school Nebraska Bug Eaters and the 11.5. You guys know that was their original nickname, right?
Oh, yeah. I did not know that.
The Bug Eaters. I used to have a sweatshirt, Bill. It said Nebraska Bug Eaters.
I am not going to overthink it because Reese at some point on Saturday is going to be sitting there early afternoon being like, why did I possibly have faith in Nebraska? Like, they just gave up 45 to Georgia Southern, and you have Dylan Gabriel and Jeff Lebby and a whole bunch of better skill rolling into the stadium. And for as much as there may be an energy boost from an interim, there's also going to be some, I think, inherent hiccups that come with, you know, just a new coach. So there's a case for Nebraska, but until I see more from them, there is zero chance I'm picking them the rest of the year. I think Oklahoma wins by 21.
Yeah, I think this is a 60-minute game pick right here. If it was a 30-minute game, I think Nebraska could absolutely use all the energy boost that we talk about. Because I do think, I mean, the environment's going to be three times better because they went ahead and spent the extra money to fire Scott Frost. I think, you know, it does kind of, whether it's real or not, it does kind of give you this little jolt of hope and whatnot. And, you know, maybe some trick plays. You got a staff in there that isn't really worried about getting fired anymore, so they can kind of loosen up a little bit and have some fun.
YOLO.
So that, I think that says very good things about how Nebraska will play in the first half. But I can't pick that defense right now. They fixed their offense to a certain degree. Special teams are less disastrous, and Scott Frost got fired anyway because suddenly they couldn't stop anybody. And if you give up 500 yards to Northwestern and whatever it was, 600 something to Georgia Southern, this game's close for a while, but Oklahoma still wins by 14-17.
Hey, Sarah, do you have any faith in the Huskers?
Oh, absolutely, because you don't know how electric Memorial Stadium is going to be. Grammy's going to be there.
Grammy is going.
They have had season tickets since the 60s.
Wow.
So Grammy, she's all in.
She's in on the Mickey Joseph era, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't Casey Thompson have on his resume spinning the old magic bean for nearly four bills against Oklahoma?
Keep talking yourself into it, Reese.
I said I wasn't going to do this, didn't I? And then here I go again. Every time I think I'm out, Jerry, they pull me back in. Seinfeld reference for you.
Yeah.
Speaking of people who keep pulling you back in, Sean Clifford taking Penn State, a 3-point favorite to Auburn. Do we believe in Sean Clifford? His stock like cratered in that Purdue game. People were screaming for Drew Allaire, and then he leads the game winning drive and all is well in Happy Valley. So what do you guys think? Let's go Pete, Bill, Reese.
So Drew Allaire has been sensational from what I've heard behind the scenes at Penn State. So take that for what it is. Drew Allaire will be in that conversation. Sean Clifford is a very good college quarterback and has evolved to a point where he's not going to lose you a game at this stage in his career. And with better tailbacks has come a better offensive line. And I see Bill sort of disagreeing. That's fine.
He'll lose it and then win it back and then lose it again and then win it back. That's kind of the roller coaster.
We care about the end result here. I think Penn State wins by 10, and I think Nick Singleton charges into America's consciousness on Saturday.
Yeah, that's kind of. I still don't completely trust Sean Clifford because of the roller coaster that's always involved. But Singleton, you know, he got a little more of the lion's share of the carries last week. First week against Purdue, maybe it was just because it was his first game. And we always know about freshman running backs and the coaches never trust their blocking and all that. So, you know, he didn't really get a full taste. But then last week he just comes in and explodes right out of the gate, has two long touchdowns. That was kind of what we expected to see all along. And if Sean Clifford still suddenly has a running game, that kind of changes the equation completely. Like heading into the year with Drew Allaire as the backup, this felt like a really good situation for Clifford where, you know, Penn State didn't have to worry about him getting hurt. He could run more and really kind of enhance the run game. He hasn't run at all, which is kind of an interesting, you know, he's trying to be more pocket based and I guess make himself more of a pro prospect. I don't think that serves him or Penn State well long term, but if he's got a new Saquon in the backfield, well, not Saquon exactly, but a good running back in the backfield, then that changes everything. And I think they probably got too much for Auburn at that point.
When you have a back like Nick Singleton and you're worried about him blocking, that is akin to worrying about Secretariat not being able to pull a plow. You know, I mean, you know, give him the ball. You know, we'll figure it out. Sure, just get in somebody's way. Be a speed bump, you know, in the blocking game. You guys have been to Jordan-Hare Stadium. When the War Eagle starts flying over, there can be some unusual things that unfold there. Balls bounce off tubas. You know, things can go in unexpected directions. This will not be one of those days. Singleton, Clifford. Auburn will fight their guts out. I don't think they're good enough on offense. And I think Penn State will win and cover.
I was, for my Friday preview column, I was looking back through quotes from my Penn State. I went to Penn State in spring and talked to their coordinators and everything. And you know, James Franklin's very professional, very straightforward. Manny Diaz is very professional and straightforward in interview settings. It was nice having Mike Yurcich to get kind of fired up. He'll give you some pretty fun quotes. And I asked him about managing expectations, you know, but because I mean, he's got, you know, 5-star freshman quarterback, 5-star freshman running back. Like, how do you ease him in and blah, blah, blah. And he started slow and got just, you know, more and more fired up through the course of the answer. But he's like, well, that's interesting. You'll never hear us in a staff meeting say like, yeah, let's talk about how we're going to meet a high expectation. we're trying to get guys going to class. Are we coaching as well as we can? Are they, we don't talk about meeting expectations. That's a you guys job. And then he gets real fired up. I think he jumped out of his chair at one point. He's like, how would you do that if you're a coach? Let's go to a meeting. Okay, guys, we got the next big thing right here. He's sitting right here in the front row. We got to give the ball a lot to meet these journalists' expectations.
You know what? You know what, Bill? It's funny, but I don't mind them picking on us. But that is that's a red herring. That's like, or a straw man army. They're like, hey, look over here. Don't look at what's really happening. Everybody knows they don't talk about it in the coaches meeting. That's an absurd thing for him to say. What we're talking about, and he knows it, by the way, when they come in the recruiting, they're expecting to get the ball. They want to produce. That's what you're talking about. Or the inherent pressure that's going to come if you don't win the game at Purdue. You know, that's what we're talking about, and they know it. So we have to do a great job of asking the questions in a way as best we can. Sometimes you can't stop them from taking those off ramps and trying to say, oh, you stupid little people that don't do this ethereal thing that I do. I coach football and therefore I understand young men. Give me a freaking break. You know, anyway, other than that,
it was lovely.
What now?
It was a lovely compliment to James Franklin's very diplomatic answer. So I appreciate it getting both sides.
Yeah, no, Bill's being more diplomatic than I am here. And I don't blame them for doing it, by the way. And they do it artfully and expertly, but you know, it's absurd when they start talking down and saying, well, of course we don't. Well, we know you don't say, okay, number one on the game plan board this week, how are we going to manage the expectations? We're talking about, because the same guys then turn around and pay thousands and thousands of dollars, and rightfully so, to the mental conditioning coaches to come in to deal with their players and how they manage expectations. Boom. I'm telling you, man. I mean, these guys get on. I love them, and they also get on my nerves sometimes. Okay.
Michigan State heading to Washington.
That's all you got, Taylor, after that rant. All you've got is Michigan State is going to Washington.
We'll clear it out. We'll put a break there just to let it breathe, you know, let everyone recover. Now we're back. Michigan State at Washington. Washington, a 3.5-point favorite. This is a little surprising to me because Michigan State is the most hyped 7-5 team of all time. So I thought that the line would be, you know, in their favor, but I guess not. Let's go Bill Reese-Pete for this.
Yeah, this is... I've stared at this line for the last 2 days just thinking I'm missing something because, you know, if Washington turns out to be really good this year... it won't be all that much surprising. They're, you know, just a couple of years from being really good. Kalen DeBoer, you know, I wrote this all off season when talking about Washington. Hiring a guy who's been awesome at every single job he's ever had seems like a pretty good idea. And I assume it's going to work out pretty well for him. And they probably exceeded expectations a little bit here in the opening. Even if it was Kent State and Portland State, they still kind of exceeded projections. So that's all good. My SP Plus rating still have Michigan State by 7.5. And I can't really disagree with that. I feel like, you know, a couple of years ago during the COVID season, when there was a huge difference between the line and my projections, I was like, all right, well, we're about to find out that 17 guys aren't playing this week. I mean, unless that's the case with Michigan State, I don't know why I wouldn't take Michigan State. They're just a much more trustworthy entity, we'll say. Even if it's not 7.5, I still trust Michigan State at this point, and we'll find out what we need to about Washington very quickly.
I'm inclined to go with Washington at home, just sort of on a gut feel with Michael Penix. But one of the things that that Michigan State's really into the science of all this. The Spartans are going to bed an hour earlier, trying to deal with the time change using some compression tights. And you remember they did some things in advance of their trip to Miami when they knew it was going to be hot and humid, and they clobbered the Canes when they went down there last year, the year before last, whenever that was. Not year before last. It must have been last year. But anyway, I sort of do too. I don't know why I can't get away from the feeling that maybe Michigan State doesn't have it all put together yet, and that this is a really good topsy-turvy moment for Washington. Now, you know what? I'm going to go back. I earlier said I thought Washington was going to win the game. I'm going to go with Sparty. I'm going to go with Sparty. Bill, you convinced me basically at the end of the day.
Well, I'm going to go with Reese's gut initially, because Reese started the podcast by saying he was only going to go with his gut, and he's conflicted his gut pretty much on every pick.
I have. So, that's right. I have. Old habits die hard, Pete.
Yes. I like Washington in this game. I just think it's a program that's settled in a little bit. I think there'll be a distinct home field advantage, and I think there are some knowns about Michigan State this year, including Jalen Berger, but I think there are some unknowns, and I would like to see what happens, you know, when they get hit in the mouth on the road. We weren't able to glean a ton from either of these two teams' first two games in like the can they compete for the conference title type conversations. And so I will lean into the home team here, and I will lean into Kalen DeBoer. I said on our Wednesday pod, Bill, that, you know, the guy won in the NAIA and he won in Division II, and you made that point. It's just like, and he has Michael Penix. And when he had Michael Penix last time, it went pretty well. Yeah. So I think that, you know, there's no distinct quarterback advantage on either side. And I'm going to default on the, on the home team here. And I just think Michigan State has not shown to me that they are what they were last year with Kenneth Walker gone.
I'm already so conflicted. I want to go back, but I'm not going to, because that's bad for the podcast. No, I want to go back. But anyway,
if it turns out Washington's really good this year, it's not going to be a surprise at all. This is just more like of a, we don't quite have the evidence we need just yet. So I'm going to dare them to prove me wrong.
Pete, you think I've made any progress at all in going gut? I don't think I have. I need one of those mental conditioning guys that the coaches hire to kind of get me over this.
You're trending to the territory on the old Yahoo podcast I had. We used to Pat Forty was really bad at picks. So we had a fourth participant called Tap, which was the opposite of Pat. And so I think we can go with Easter. Would that be how you pronounce the opposite of Reese?
You've got to give me a couple more weeks, because like I told you, I think on
nobody's
Monday,
been good.
My SP Plus projections of your picks don't really show a whole lot of promise, Reese.
Yeah. You know, the thing, exactly. The thing that drives me nuts is that, you know, we don't play games of chance among friends around there, you know, even in just entertainment or competitive purposes, we don't do that. But if we did, I would be faring quite well. But somehow on the podcast, I get on here and I just absolutely blow it. So anyway.
But on the bright side, nobody's done well. So you're fine. Yeah.
Well, that'll change. That'll change. And I'll be sitting there getting grief from you clowns the rest of the year. What else? What else have we got?
Let's move to our last box of games here. There's three more. These are games that will be trickier than they appear. Texas Tech going to NC State. NC State, a 10-point favorite. Line seems a little disrespectful to Texas Tech. Let's go Reese, Pete, Bill.
I'm the one that created this category of games, so that ought to give you a sense of where I'm leaning. I really like this NC State team, but I think the line's too big. I think Texas Tech will cover that line, so I'm going to take the Red Raiders going on the road, backup quarterback, just as good as Tyler Shuck, I think. So I'm going to go with Texas Tech.
Faith in NC State has not been rewarded if you go over the years. So we'll keep this tight and say I really like Texas Tech in this game. And it wouldn't surprise me if some of my game day cohorts pick the Red Raiders as a super dog. They have elite skill on the outside that really flashed against Houston. And if there's one thing you can count on NC State in big games, it's that you can't count on them. And certainly not to win by 11.
There's a joke on Twitter during basketball, like during Utah Jazz games, like it's Jordan Clarkson time, says Jordan Clarkson. Donovan Smith, the entire fourth quarter against Houston the other day, is like, all right, it's Donovan Smith time. And he went out and tried to win the game with every single pass he made. He threw a couple terrible picks. One was taken back a long way. He basically lost the game and then converted a 4th-and-20 and won it in overtime. So he left every possible impression. And basically Texas Tech as a whole kind of basically seems like a better and more extreme East Carolina, which makes me very nervous for NC State in that regard, just because they seem capable of a whole lot of good and a whole lot of bad. And it's going to be a lot for them to handle. My numbers say like NC State by 9, no real difference from the line on this one. I guess I'll lean Tech because of that, but yeah, this one's volatile, and I hope it's as fun as it's going to be in my head with Smith making a lot of both good and bad plays. But I have high expectations for this one just from a pure entertainment standpoint.
I love a good Super Bowl game. UTSA heading to Austin. Mm-hmm. The Longhorns, a 12.5-point favorite. Let's go Pete, Bill, Reese.
Texas has lost 7 of its last 9 games. So expecting Texas, is that right, Bill? Didn't they lose six or seven?
That shocked me, but that's
yeah. I believe they lost 6 of 7 to close the year. They had a late win over K-State, and they have lost 1 of 2 this year. So until proving that they can win games, never mind win games handily, I am going to take the program that has, you know, given us a little bit more faith. So there were a lot of good signs for Texas, but I am still skeptical because of a very recent and distinct series of events. I also really think Hudson Card isn't going to be healthy just from watching him play in the second half of that Alabama game. And I think UTSA stacks the box and dares Texas to beat them. And maybe Xavier Worthy does, but old Jeff Traylor's, ain't his first rodeo walking into a stadium in Texas. So I am taking the Roadrunners with those points, and I would not be surprised if they were singing the fight song in the corner of the field after the game.
Ooh. Okay. So I can follow all that right until the point where I just looked and UTSA is 120th so far this year in points allowed per drive. Now they play two pretty good offenses in Houston and Army, maybe better than whatever Texas fields. Texas does have Bijan Robinson, however, even if he's also, what's his health status? I know he was kind of banged up the other day too. I guess he's going to be fine as far as we know.
He's fine.
So I can't get past that. Like basically, you know, from a computer standpoint, the line is being very kind to UTSA. I know my number is SP Plus has it like 15.1 for Texas. And I know FPI, which loved Texas at the beginning of the year, had them even higher, like 18 or 19 points, I think. So I'm going to go with that. I do. It's really not hard to craft a scenario where UTSA comes in and punches them in the mouth and Texas is hungover and their defense goes back to being last year's defense and all those things. But I'm going to guess that at the end of the day, Texas pulls away and manages to win comfortably.
Most of the time when you expect a hangover game, you don't get it. those usually are the ones that sneak up on you. I'm sure that this has been the focal point of the preparation for Texas this week. And Sark has even said as much going in. I've got great regard for UTSA. I think that this is going to be a game where for the first three quarters, I'm saying I'm the one who put this in the trickier than it appears category. Look at Frank Harris. He just did it again. And why didn't I go with the Roadrunners? But I think Texas gets a late score somehow, some way, and they win by 13 or 14. So I'm going to go Texas, but they'll spend most of the game looking as if UTSA is either going to be a lock to cover or a threat to win. But I'll go Texas barely and late covering the spread.
I love that I'm like with Reese's gut
on everything, by the way. And then he's just disagreeing with it. It's like, really, I feel like I'm soaring.
No. See, I define these. It will be trickier because on paper, you'd look at it and go, Texas just almost beat Alabama. They're going to beat San Antonio, even if UTSA won 12 games last year. I don't care. They're going to beat them. That's what I mean. Doesn't mean it always has to be the underdog. So this is my gut talking this time, Pete. My gut tells me that Texas will end up doing just enough to cover the spread.
It's not the gut I heard from the Wednesday podcast.
You're just a contrarian. I've had two more days to think about it.
All right. Two more days to talk yourself out of it.
Yeah, that's true. That's probably true.
All right, gents, last game on the board here. Kansas, fresh off of applying the lame duck tag to Neil Brown. They're heading to Houston. Houston, 10-point favorites. Can they do it? Bill, Reese, Pete.
This is one where I'm just going to trust the numbers more than, because when you watch Jalen Daniels play, you can talk yourself severely into Kansas. Their defense still stinks. And so just going to go with Houston. Right up front, I think my numbers say like Houston by 16. That's fine. We'll go with that. But Jalen Daniels is so fun to watch. This Kansas offense brings so much interesting stuff to the table and kind of has since the moment he stepped into the lineup late last year. That was the thing with Kansas last year was, Lance Leipold gets to town in May. There's no culture building. There's no nothing. The strength coach is the only guy who really knows anybody on the team until they get to practice in August. They are absolutely abysmal for the first 2 months of the year. They kind of jump up and almost punch Oklahoma in the mouth, and then they go back to stinking for a minute longer. And in the last month, they're legitimately solid. Beat Texas, almost beat West Virginia, almost beat TCU. They actually knew their players and they understood that Jalen Daniels is the best quarterback. Therefore, this is who we are now. I think you can trust Kansas's offense at this point and maybe they're going to overachieve those projections because of it, but their defense still stinks. And that's why I'm going to go with the Cougars.
Rock chalk Jayhawk KU. Woo! I like Jalen Daniels and I like what Leipold is doing. Defense may still stink. Houston's been a disappointment to me in the way it's played up to this point this season. I'm going to take Kansas in the points.
I'm really taking this opposite of Reese thing to an extreme here. So I really think this is a sound strategy. Look, I have a ton of respect for what Lance Leipold has done. I just need a little more empirical evidence, and I think Houston has shown that they can score, and I think Doug Belk will show a little bit more of a pulse on defense in this game. I think Houston wins by two touchdowns. I think last week is more of an indictment of West Virginia than a declaration of Kansas as a Big 12 contender.
No, nobody said they were a Big 12 contender now. It's not, get carried away here.
That would be a heck of a story to write, though. No, I did. I went to Lawrence, and Kansas is the one team I didn't jinx the crap out of so far in the profiles that I've been writing this year. I mean, his culture building, nobody builds culture like Lance Leipold at this point, and they're going to, if he actually stays, if like Nebraska doesn't offer him a crazy amount of money or something, he's going to build Kansas into something pretty impressive. Wherever you set that bar, whether that means like going 6-6 or something better, I don't know. But they're only there on one side of the ball so far.
109-6
on a scale. Okay, so let me ask you this: on a scale of Chuck Weiss to Mark Mangino, what do you expect the Leipold era to ultimately be described as?
It'll be one of those, like, if you look at Mangino's total record, you're like, oh yeah, he only had that like one really good year, didn't he? I think that, I don't know if Leipold can pull a 2007, but I think he can definitely pull a 2008 and get them to like 8-5 or whatever they ended up being that year. So that's, I think that's where we're setting the bar right now. Yeah, I mean, if we want to go to full 2007 this year and just go nuts like the first 2 weeks have been, I'm in, but I don't quite see that from Kansas just yet.
Yes. Todd Reesing, and the boys had a great run back in the late aughts. He was one of the great early kind of spread quarterbacks, 5'11 kid from Austin, you know, just like a tick short and a tick slow and a really good quarterback. And I feel like, look, Mangino had them in the thicket of the national title race in that was 07, right? Like that was the mind bending year. I would struggle to ever project Kansas football in the thicket of the national title race again. Do I think they can be above 500, win bowls, be functional and competitive, entice that administration to really invest and get a foothold in the top half of a new Big 12 within the next 5 years? Yeah, I think they could do that. I see if Kansas State can figure out a way to do it, and if Oklahoma State can be dominant, there's no reason why Kansas, which is a fine place to go to school, and they have access to enough talent in a bunch of different avenues, there's no reason why Kansas can't be a functional Big 12 program.
And as a Mizzou guy, this is making me itchy saying all these nice things. So I will point out that Chase Daniel, 14-year pro, made the best possible pro career in the history of pro careers. He's barely gotten hit. He's made tens of millions of dollars. It's been great for him. That makes me feel better since we're talking about 2007.
I believe Todd Reesing got in Austin real estate, and I think he's doing just fine.
I think so. He's probably doing okay.
All right, gents, to close up the pod today, let's hear your locks for the week.
I'll start. Michigan State might have been it, but I don't think we can do lock again, though we've already talked about. So instead, I'm just going to have some fun here. My numbers, leaning on those numbers a lot this week, say Notre Dame by 19.9 against Cal. The line, wow, I think, is like 10 or 10 and a half. Now, you know, we can say that, hey, their quarterback's hurt. I don't know if that hurts them at all with what we've seen so far. But even if it does, you know, the thought of Cal actually scoring points, this is going to be a rock fight. Cal loves rock fights, and they're going to keep a low scoring. But I struggle to see Notre Dame getting held low enough to allow Cal into this game too much. So we're going to say it's like 24-10 Notre Dame, something like that. They get going a little bit, but nothing amazing, and they cover.
I don't like to pick big number games in my locks. Typically, I just feel like that you set yourself up for goofy backdoors and such. So that said, I'm going to pull a Reese Davis and go against my fundamental tenets. I love Minnesota against Colorado. I love Minnesota against Colorado because Minnesota has looked excellent the first 2 weeks, which if you look back at PJ Fleck's tenure is there, they had struggled some games. Like they needed to win against, I believe it was South Dakota State, like on an early Thursday game. Like the PJ Fleck's team has gotten better, which is a compliment to him, but they have not come out like a rocket ship every time. They've come out like a rocket ship this year. And Colorado is dismal and hopeless right now. There's really no other way to say it. It is a Colorado team that just got grounded and pounded by an excellent Air Force team. The issue for Colorado is that Minnesota's just got better runners and better O-line, and Colorado was hopeless at home against Minnesota last year. It was a 30-0 game. And this is a 28-point spread. I feel like Minnesota is 15% better, and I feel like Colorado is 15% worse. So I think the boat rowers grind them right into ground beef in Minneapolis this weekend. The line, I believe, is 27.5, and I am happy to project the Golden Gophers by 4 touchdowns.
You took mine. I agree with you. That's a great that's a great lock. And I will go in a
different direction. Yeah, listen to your gut, Reese.
Yeah, I do. Well, I'll tell you, here's the gut. You may be withholding information because you know everything from me, but I imagine because of Chip Kelly saying that DTR, or that Zach Charbonnet was unavailable or whatever, not some of the cloud. That line has gone down, UCLA and South Alabama. And I know the Sun Belt is on a run and game day is going to a Sun Belt school and Kane Womack and Major Applewhite rolling into the Rose Bowl, maybe for an epic upset. That line's 15.5. I'll take the Bruins and lay it and say that that's my lock this week.
All right. Bruins can ground and pound.
All right, boys. So we've made picks. Pete and I are on opposite sides, which makes both of us feel good.
There'll be some texts flying on Saturday.
Yeah, I did not make a lot of progress in my resolve to just go with my gut. And it's amazing how much I can talk myself into in the short period, shorter than people realize, short period of time between Wednesdays and Fridays. But I've once again been able to do so. But hey, we'll do it three times a week. Picks are fun at the end because, you know, like we had a producer at ESPN years ago, you break down all of this stuff, you know, 3-3-5 defenses, guards getting to the second level, route trees. And he'd say, I don't care. Just tell me who and by how many. And that's what the Friday version of the podcast is about. Bill, Pete, a lot of fun. Bill, wish you were joining us in Boone. Pete and I are going to try a variety of the restaurant recommendations that we've been handed.
Keep those coming.
Absolutely. Yeah,
all the places that you could go, that's very, very high on the jealousy list. That's going to be a super fun time.
You know, if Pete and I actually ate at every restaurant recommendation that we've been given, we'd have to be there for about 3 weeks.
Yeah. Luckily, my resolve to like stop eating carbs and eat healthy is similar to your resolve to follow your gut. So there's some Boone eateries that are in for a treat this weekend.
Until the off season.
Don't do that. I mean, you know, stop eating carbs.
I should say my resolve to work out. That might be better.
Okay. Yeah. Then, no, that you should do. That you should do. All things in moderation, my friend, except the podcast. Consume it all the time, as often as you can. Three times a week. Get it wherever you get podcasts. This is the College Game Day Podcast. We'll see you next week.